You're listening to Utah, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Okay, welcome to this episode of Ute Talk. This is the Wednesday episode with myself, Grant Bagby, and Joseph Silverswig, both of us contributors for TornBySports.com. This episode, as Andy and Patrick talked about on Monday, will be more focused on looking ahead to the upcoming games, as well as giving some statistical thoughts, things to think about as we look forward to the upcoming game. Well, we do want to start, though, reviewing a little bit of the Cal game. I'm trying to remember the glorious win versus the extreme letdown. Joseph, any thoughts you want to share with regards to last game's outcome against Cal?
Yeah, I think people are thinking that the defense is showing up just the way that it always does, and the offense has been a problem. But I'm starting to wonder if this defense isn't maybe as good as people think it is. Both against USC and against Cal, we had a very effective ball control approach where we'd run 10, 15, 20 play drives and eat up a huge amount of clock and kind of keep the score low. But when the other offense would get the ball, they would get a huge per-play yardage. And as a stats guy, I try not to look at per-game yardage or season-to-date yardage, but rather to look at, well, what are they doing per play? Because that tends to give you a better idea looking forward of what you can expect. And USC was picking up 8 yards a carry. Cal had great per-carry yards. And then they're having just no trouble at all getting into the defensive backfield, but they're getting long passing plays. So I'm starting to wonder if, as we get deeper into this season, the defense isn't going to be what keeps the Utes from winning games.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree. I'm actually quite comfortable with the defense. I mean, sure, they're giving up some big plays, and USC and Cal have kind of exposed them a little bit. But, I mean, I think that's kind of to be expected, especially when, on the outside, Hatfield's been injured and is coming back from a knee injury. Reggie Porter, I mean, we're going to talk plenty of injuries as we look at forward to Arizona. But, I mean, Porter looks to be banged up, and who knows whether he's going to play this coming weekend. I mean, there's just it just seems like we're rotating so many players through the defense right now that it's hard for me to, hold that against them.
Yeah, and I don't so much think that it's a talent issue, but I wonder if we're not seeing some of the lack of experience in Scally's game planning. He seems to be getting beaten in sort of the chess match of things. With Cal, he was getting beaten over the top on the sidelines, but with USC, they seem to find a way to create holes in the middle of the field and exploit those. And those holes were there by design, but what Scally's got to be able to do is adapt to what USC is doing and sort of fill those in. And I'm not sure yet that he's shown he can do that. The other thing that we haven't really seen yet, but that I was worried about watching the San Jose State game again, is a mobile quarterback. And this week we're likely to go up against almost a pure read option player simply because he doesn't have a lot of experience. And the Utes defense has been a little over aggressive at times and kind of left the middle of the field open for big runs from quarterbacks, which is something that we've seen in the past with other Ute defenses. It didn't happen a lot last year, but if you go back and you watch some of Kalani Sitake's calls against players like Marcus Mariota or Chucky Keaton, you see these big gashing runs right up the middle as the defensive line sort of folds up around him. And I'm worried that we're going to see a lot of that next week, particularly on third and longs, where we'll think we have him and then pressure's closing in. They'll just kind of squirt out the middle and get that first down yardage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. In regards to the Cal game, I really just have one rant I want to go on. So do you have any other thoughts real quick before I go ranting?
Yeah, I'm just gonna give you the mic. I feel like you've probably got it under control, Chris.
Well, to be honest with you, I am just annoyed and frustrated with how much of a big deal everyone's making of the timeout. And I know Whittingham's still pissed about it. Like, if someone asked him today, he would still be pissed about the timeout call. But the fact of the matter is refs don't choose to select the game outcomes. Ultimately, they don't change. I mean, there's been very few instances where they legitimately made the wrong call at the end of the game that literally decided who won that game. The Utes still should have won. They still should have been able to ram it down the Cal's throat to get it 2 yards into the goal line. Williams should still be able – I mean, literally, my favorite play in football is a play-action pass when a tight end leaks out on the goal line. It is
right.
It works.
And then you get that little bootleg, and you get to decide what to do, and it should work every time, and somehow –
How the two times that I can remember the Utes running it, that Troy Williams, like, I like the guy, he's a good quarterback, does everything that the Utes ask him to do outside of doing two things. One is throwing a good ball to the tight end on that bootleg play. I mean, people were saying the tight end should have caught it. Yeah, he got his hands on it. Should bring that down. But why in the world are you throwing a bullet that high? Like, are you kidding me? The other throw earlier. And then, like, he obviously can't run the option. Now, it seems to me that he's nicked up and he's injured. And
that's what we're
he's playing. Yeah, I mean, that's what is the problem. So let's just stop with the option plays. He's right now, he's a pocket passer who's avoiding contact, and that's the way he needs to be going. But, my gosh, I mean, we dominate on fourth down when it's fourth and short, and yet the final play of the game, we can't run it in. And our quarterback can't make the – what I would consider one of the most necessary throws in college football. Like there's so many other reasons the Utes lost the game against Cal. It is not that timeout. And by the way, like, I would love for Whittingham, like, I love his emotion. I love that he's going for it on fourth down. Like, if you're going to go bicker with the refs about this timeout and try to get it back, how about you look back and make sure that Harding, who's on the sidelines, taking care of your offense so the players have to listen to another coach instead of watching you lose your cool on the refs? It just seemed like the whole team became discombobulated after they saw Whittingham lose his cool. I mean, after he was done arguing with the refs, he turns around and he's like, hey, why are you guys looking at me? Do your job. Like, it's like, I'm sorry, how about you do a little bit more of not losing your cool when something doesn't go your way? Like, there's no reason the Utes lose that game. And that's the other thing that just pissed me off. Like, and so I think KSL gave the coaches a grade of a B, and I saw plenty of people saying, hey, why isn't an A? The coaches put them in the position to win. I agree. But the biggest coaching mistake of the game was made by Whittingham when he lost his cool and his team couldn't recover it because they didn't know what to do. I mean, it was clear. I mean, Zach Moss couldn't run it in. Two plays. I mean, they screwed up on one fourth down, they didn't convert. And then we get to third and short and fourth and short on goal, on the freaking goal line, and we don't get any movement. Like, I'm sorry, that's coaching. I'm blaming that loss 100% on Whittingham. How it is in my opinion.
I don't think that the timeout should have hurt the Utes as much as it did, but I think what happened is losing that timeout broke the Utes' focus, and that's on the coaches. And I think they reacted to it differently. I mean, he's got every right to be upset. He was absolutely robbed at the timeout. But if he'd been able to maintain his focus and use the time that he spent screaming at somebody to get everybody settled down and decide who he was going to have run that play and make sure, because Shine should have been in and should have been the guy running those plays, and that was a mistake that they made there. I think Shine would have gotten in for that touchdown behind Asiata. And I think the team feeds off that, and you've got some coaches who run hot all the time, and, you know, the football team gets used to it and they adapt to it. But the very best coaches, I mean, the very best coaches, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban, are like statues. They just have no reaction to anything. They're completely level. And what that means is that the players, when they feel emotional, have sort of a, a place to go that's grounded and that's really focused on just make the next play, just make the next play. And they lost that. And I think that losing that is on Whittingham, and has a lot to do with why we weren't able to do it. It has a lot to do with why Troy Williams maybe didn't make the right decision regarding run or throw at that moment. It has to do with why his throw wasn't on point. It has to do with why, well, yeah, he didn't come down with a catch. All of that stuff stems from this idea that you've got to hold on, I've got a 3-year-old helping me. Hold on, just 1 second, sweetie, and then I'll help you. That whole idea stems from this need to have a coach whose level is steady.
Yeah, no, and the level-headedness, you know, man, it just, that was the one thing I was really pissed off about after the game. It had nothing to do with the 1/4 down in the red zone that they missed. Like, there was just plenty of things that, you know, you could complain about, but that's my big complaint. Honestly, I really hope they run that tight end leak out play again. And next time, let's just have Troy Williams pump fake so the player commits to the tight end and then he can run it in. But let's move on. We've got a game to look forward to, and it's against Arizona, and the Utes are looking to finally end the streak against Rich Rod, which has been a 4-game losing streak.
Oh,
so
I hate this game every year at this point.
So let's get started. This game is looking like, I don't know how to describe it other than the image that comes to my mind, like two zombies looking ready to battle. I mean, they're just bruised and battered and bloodied up and look horrendous. And
we're really playing the second string Arizona Wildcats. They don't have anybody left in a number of key positions.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about their injuries. I mean, tell us what we've got coming from Arizona. I know you've been doing some research on, you know, really giving us an idea of what the injuries are.
There aren't a ton of season-ending injuries. The backup quarterback has bruised, maybe broken ribs. A new Solomon's got something going on with his lower leg. And so they're down to this Khalil Tate fellow, who's a true freshman. They've got a walk-on quarterback as well, but he really was not able to produce or do anything, just didn't have the talent level against UCLA. And Khalil Tate is more or less totally unprepared to be an NCAA quarterback. He runs the read option, and that's about it. He'll probably have a few more plays in his playbook this week. He's a very talented 4-star recruit, but not ready. And then there's two running backs out right now, so they're down to third-string running back. Third-string running back used to be the kick returner, but now they've got a backup kick returner coming in. Their two starting linebackers are out. Two offensive linemen didn't travel with the team to UCLA, and another one was out in the first quarter and didn't return. So they're basically backup O-line, backup running back, third-string quarterback, backup kick return. I mean, it is an absolute mess unit. There's almost nobody left on the offense, and the defense has been a whole heck of a lot better in the front seven.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Khalil Tate, who's 17 years old, will be starting at quarterback most likely. I mean, there's, you know, some question of whether a new Solomon might be back for this weekend, but all indicators are that it's going to be Tate back there, and that if Solomon even started, that they might even move Tate to running back, which would be kind of crazy. But as much as Tate, you know, they really wanted to redshirt him this year, I'm really intrigued. I think, you know, you mentioned the concern of going against a mobile quarterback. Tate is exactly that. But, you know, looking at the Pac-12 stats, Arizona is, you know, bottom three in passing stats right now. They are almost, but they are number two, I believe it is, when it comes to rushing offense. So they're, as much as it's a spread read option, that is a running game altogether. And if they have Tate at running back, quarterback slash running back in this offense based on their stats, they're going to be looking to run it. And it's kind of crazy. Like this last game, they're like you were referencing as their kick returner who was playing running back. I mean, they moved a guy over from the slot. So it's almost like moving, Corey Butler Bird to running back for the Utes, if you give Ute fans a comparison. So it's kind of, it's pretty crazy, but based on, what I've seen and been hearing, this Tate kid, everything I hear reminds me of Taysom Hill of old. Where...
That's exactly what I was thinking when I was watching what he did. He's like that first season Taysom Hill where there were glimpses of true quarterbacking ability, but it was really what he was able to do with his legs that made him dangerous. And, they're just going to run the ball. It's going to be – it's almost like a wildcat situation where there may be a couple of pass plays in there, but it's going to be zone reads and option runs and things like that. It's just – the ball's not going to be going downfield very often.
Yeah. I mean, the running back situation is interesting because Nick Wilson, who's been having a good season – got banged up with an ankle injury. He was going to play against UCLA, gave it a go, ankle injury flared back up. And from someone who's suffering from an ankle injury now and trying to rehab it, they suck. And making quick cuts and doing everything that a running back really needs to do to be explosive, like it's going to be really hard if Wilson decides to give it a go at running back for Arizona. So I'm kind of expecting that like you were saying, I'm blanking on his name right now, but pretty much a slot receiver back at quarterback with Khalil Tate running. I mean, I almost feel like it's going to be Arizona without the full, or not Arizona, Air Force without the fullback action. But, we'll see.
It depends, and it's the kind of offense that Rich Rod likes to run, so I think it's all in the playbook already. I mean, you'd hesitate to say if, say UCLA was playing a player like Khalil Tate, where it's a highly mobile quarterback, but too new to the game to be able to do the quarterback stuff, you still would expect them to do a lot of passing because they're UCLA and they throw the ball a lot. But since this is Rich Rod's bread and butter, is this behind the line of scrimmage stuff, I think that you'll see that almost universally. There'll be undefended screen passes and things like that, but it's not going to be. He does not have anything like his full playbook available to him. I think the big advantage for the Utes, who are also running out there with, 12 players who may not be able to play who are starters, but they've got their quarterback and they've got wide receivers that they can rely on, so the whole playbook is available. We can go down the field, we can stay behind the line of scrimmage, and I think that as a defensive coordinator, you love the idea of a team that can only do one thing. It gives you an opportunity to just kind of key in on that, pin your ears back, and make it.
I mean, let's talk about Utah's injuries. I mean, Troy Williams is clearly, he's nicked up apparently. McCormick's nicked up. These kind of like nagging injuries. I mean, Butler Bird didn't travel with the team, but people are saying that he was he was expecting a child to be born. But Coach Whittingham has also referenced that he's, nicked up, I would say. I mean, we're still hoping to get Lolo Tulele back. Dillman is a huge loss at center. I mean, it sounds like they're rotating three different players to see who's going to play center right now. You've got Fulks, who got injured against Cal. See what's come of that. Tim Patrick's, he went out during for the second half, but he's also said that he's going to play. So there's questions of how injured he is. I mean, Reggie Porter didn't play most of the game against Cal, and then Tyron Smith has a brace on right now, but he was able to play. So we'll see what happens there. And then even Lo Falikamaka, who I believe took over for Dillon afterwards. His question was, well, to the point that they've got other linemen looking at who's going to play center. So the Utes are pretty banged up, but a lot of these players, Patrick's saying he's going to play. Troy, I haven't heard anything other than Troy Williams is going to play. McCormick has kind of slid down to where now it's going to be definitely Shine and Moss expecting the bulk of the workload, but who's to say McCormick doesn't play still? And And, you know, there's, I feel like it's a big, a lot of these injuries, it's a big fat question mark on whether these players are going to play and what their impacts on the game will be.
Right. I mean, I think we'll see Tim Patrick out there. The question is he going to be Tim Patrick from, you know, that we've come to expect, or is it going to be a limited Tim Patrick, which is still better than most wide receivers? I mean, you still want him out there if he can play at all, but, even just the attention he demands from a defense because of what he can do is important. But
well, I kind of disagree though. Like if he's injured and hampered to where he can't go full speed, he can't do everything he would normally do. Like if I'm a defensive coordinator, you got to have your eyes on and shift your defensive game plan during the game. And I would expect that they would do that and shift their focus to other wide receivers. It would almost be more of a hindrance to Utah, not. And I would much rather, like, would you rather have, Patrick, or would you like to have, man, why am I blanking out on his name?
Not Tyron Smith.
Is that the one who was catching everything on Saturday?
Utah have a lot of wide receivers, and I think that's the point you're making. That Tyron Smith can play, and Damari Simpkins can play, and Raylon Singleton can play, and they can all get open, they can all catch the ball, and you're probably right that because you're used with the youth team, you're used to depth at wide receiver being so thin that you just need your best sort of healthy player out on the field. But that's not really a problem this year. There's more wide receivers on the roster than there are spots to put them on the field. I mean, some of them are injured right now, and that's okay because we've got these other guys. And I think you're probably right that, you know, we can rely on this sort of second run wide receivers to make a lot more plays than we might have expected the second run wide receivers to make last year.
Yeah, I was referring to Singleton. Man, I feel like a dimwit to some extent. But, yeah, I mean, the starting lineup with all these injuries could literally be, you know, you got I'd put Singleton at the X spot. You got Saucy Wilson at the Z, and then you've got, the really tricky parts, the H. I'd put Damari Simpkins at the H. And that's, you know, if that's – I'd rather go 100% with the depth of the wide receivers than have players that aren't going to be able to give 100%. I think that's our best bet to win a game versus – I mean, the talent – I like you were saying, I think the depth and the talent difference just isn't there to say, Tim Patrick, even though you're one leg right now, we need you to hop on the field.
Right. I hear you. The other thing I find heartening is that the offensive line is really banged up at center. But because we've been running three tackles out there and because we've got good guards, I feel like it's going to be possible. It's not going to have the same level of performance, but it's going to be possible to move somebody into center who's a legitimate offensive lineman. So that maybe Isaac Asiata takes the snaps or the one of the tackles takes the snaps at center. But because we've got these kind of extra legitimate starting D1 linemen, I think we're going to be able to fill in with some good big bodies and still get good, decent pass protection and particularly get good run blocking. We'll be able to, you know, run people over, which is what the Utes do best, and when they're at their best is when they're just kind of rogue grading.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because, I mean, you saw the learning curve with Dillman as far as snapping it, you know, him having moved over to the center spot and him getting, you know, from those low snaps to good snaps. And now we're going to have – and then, you know, Lowe came in and was doing good, but he's questionable for – this coming game. And so now, you know, it's looking at either Nick Nowakowski or Asiata even potentially. And, you know, I'm kind of with you. If we need to, I think it's best that we throw Asiata in that center role. But, I mean, we'll see. Ultimately, the question for this game, I don't think, is actually our offense. I think the question for this game is, can the Utes stop the read options, spread offense of Rich Rod this time and stop a third-string quarterback and hold them under, you know, what? I mean, I think a legitimate goal is in that 28, preferably 21 range, and our offense should definitely be able to score enough points to win the game, as much as, that's what Case should have been against Cal as well.
And it's been years where whoever is at running back or quarterback for Arizona has just gutted us. Years ago when it was Kadeem Carey, and he ran for 260-something, and it was just every time we turn around, there's somebody running for 200-plus. I think if we can keep these guys just the season average in rushing yards, I don't think we need to stop them. But if we can just keep someone from having the game of their life, which they always seem to against the Utes, from a statistical perspective, almost every single year we played them, this should be an easy win for the Utes. They are almost always substantially better than the Wildcats, but there is a true schematic problem, and no defensive coordinator for the Utes has been able to kind of crack the code and figure it out and turn it into a win.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I mean, the hope that I will give to everyone at this point is the Utes are number 2 in the Pac-12 in rushing defense. They've only given up just over 100 yards rushing. This defense is really good. The offense, I mean, last year when we look at these Pac-12 rankings for the Utes offense, it was 10, 11, 12 everywhere. And it isn't the top of the Pac-12, but we're right there in the middle. We're the 6th in rushing, we're 6th in passing. So the offense is good. The offense just needs to finish in the red zone. And I actually think they'll get better. I'm actually optimistic. The defense looks good.
My sort of stats perspective on red zone offense is that I certainly think there's something to the idea that the shorter field makes it more difficult and you have to call different plays and things like that. But most of that idea of red zone offense for me is kind of random. 3rd and 1 is the same on the 40-yard line as it is on the 1-yard line in terms of what they expect you to do. You're going to run the ball right up the gut, and there's going to be a series of plays that you call, and it's going to be your guys versus theirs guys, and the stronger guy wins. And so to me, I wonder if it's not like runners in scoring position in baseball where you'll have teams that do badly at it, and it will cause them to lose games. But the fact that they have done badly at it doesn't mean they're going to continue to be a bad red zone team. So I think it's just going to kind of fix itself as sort of a law of averages plays out, and the things that the Utes have been doing well start happening when they happen to be in the red zone instead of just when they happen to be between the 40s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've kind of gone over the injured. I mean, it's really – might as well just call this game the Zombie Bowl. the question, I guess, after – I mean, all that's left for me is making some picks. So do you have any other stats or anything you want to drop on Utah fans that they should be looking for in this game? And if not, let's make some picks.
Normally what I'd be concerned about is the Utes' tendency to give up these long pass plays. But I think given the opponent we're dealing with, that's probably not going to happen. It's probably going to be in the trenches and between the tackles on both sides. It's going to be whoever runs the ball well. And both teams are good rushing teams, and the Utes are really good at defending the run. And for me, that makes me lean hit pretty heavily the Utes' way. I think the game being at home, and I think this is the year the Utes are going to win maybe 33-23. I think it should be fairly comfortable.
All right. Well, I, as much as I was worried that BYU might be able to break their losing streak to Utah for the rivalry game, because just like we all know, when you're flipping a coin, eventually it has to flip the other way. I really am actually quite confident that Utah is going to find a way and win this game. I think the leadership on this team is good enough that they're going to recover from any kind of hangover from the Cal game. I think the team is, as much as there's so many injuries, I just think our team's depth and talent all around is ready to go and ready to play and prove themselves. I mean, every single player that's been interviewed this week has answered the questions about death with, you know, it's next man up. And if it's that ingrained in their head, then I don't expect it to be an issue.
They're fierce. They're ready to play. They don't seem downtrodden or anything. I think we'll get full effort from everybody.
I agree. I'm going to say that the Utes hold Arizona to 23 points, and the Ute offense is going to put up 32.
All right.
The Utes are going to put up 32. So we're going to have a nice, comfortable win. And if it's anything like any other prediction, I'm about 10 to 15 points high, and this game is going to be 17 to 14 if the Utes win. So either way, I think the Utes are going to win this game. And, any closing thoughts for you? You know, I know your three-year-old's around, and unfortunately, I mean, this was off the air, but she did take the Cal-Utah game right.
Yeah, she's a bit of a smart, so let me ask her. Hey, Amelia, can you tell me, is it going to be a Go Utes week or a Go Cats week?
Go Cats week.
Gosh darn it.
All right, Amelia's kicking the
week.
Cat. We're going to hopefully make her streak end at one on correct picks. Well, be sure to follow both Grant or follow Joseph at J Silverswig on Twitter. Follow myself at Grant TBS, and follow the podcast at Ute Talk. And we will talk to you guys next week. Next episode will be Andy and Patrick talking all about the Arizona game and looking forward to whoever's next on the schedule. Just as a closing line, don't forget, it's homecoming week. Teams wearing throwback jerseys. Games at 8 p.m. on FS1.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast or email at utetalk@gmail.com.